Hello, hello, and welcome to The Road Less Traveled with Gary L. and Gigi's Boo. Yeah, I had everything muted, so the audio was a little weird. Everything was muted out. So how you doing tonight, everybody? Gigi's Boo, you there?
I'm here.
I can't hear you.
I'm here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I hear you now. Very good. Glad that you're all right. And Grimnir hears the drums. He always hears, for some reason, he hears drums at 7 p.m. on Sundays. I'm not sure why that
is. He hears drums anyway.
Say again?
He hears drums anyway. He's Indian.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And guess who we have with us tonight, Gigi's Boo?
And who do we have?
Who is it? Is it Suspects Guy? That guy in the chat room.
Oh, yeah.
Are you there, Adrian?
Glad he joined us, yeah.
You there, Adrian?
I am here. Thank you so much for having me, Gary.
Okay, great. Yeah, we've been having all these crazy things going on with the audio beforehand. I don't know what kind of any echoes we have going tonight. We did have some earlier when we were playing with the equipment. Might have located the source of it, but we'll see as we go along. The fine ears of Grimnir and company, they can pick up that stuff, and I'm not hearing it. But I did hear it earlier, but not now. That's a good thing. So hello, chat room, RLM. Asmo's not here. I don't see Asmo much anymore, but I think I know there's some things going on there. Barman's here, Beth C, Darth Thrones, Grimnir, Moose Girl, Kate, Atomic Punk, Beetle, Chalcedonilly, Ibe Don C, two times, Java Doctor, Robwork, Sock Puppet, Behind the Woodshed, there's Hal, Clank, okay, Click and Clank, and Colfax, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and Frumpy, and Gigi's Boo, and Gigi's Boo, and Graham Z, Grendel, Yehovah, Awana Taco, Kozu, Bot, Pawn Sauce, and Suspect Sky. So anyway, something went on today, Adrian. You want to tell everybody about what you did today? It was a first for you, I think.
Oh, it definitely was. This was my first discussion video. I've done a couple before, but it was just featuring myself. This time I invited Gary and a number of others from the Suspicious Observers Fly on the Wall crew to join me in a, gosh, what was it, 2-hour long discussion. I might break that up a little bit, where we talked about Oak Island. We talked about the most recent fast radio burst discovery. We talked about laser lights being picked up at 234 stars that seemed to match a really interesting pattern of non-naturalness. And then we also discussed social media and its effects on political polarization. So it was a really exciting afternoon. And thank you so much, Gary, for being a part of it. You're a huge help.
No, you're welcome. It was a lot of fun. And it's like there's so many different points of view. How many people total were on the show?
5 or 6, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was such a wealth of points of view. It was fascinating to me to hear a lot of it. And I thought, no, Gigi's Boo, a couple of topics there that she likes, I think. I don't know how much she knows about the Oak Island thing, but the...
Oh, that's a big thing on TV now.
Yeah, they got...
They have a series on the History Channel.
Yeah,
and it's on there every week.
Yeah, and they've
stretched... I was addicted to that show for quite a while.
Yeah, and here
I just find it fascinating. I really do.
And here I'm looking at it thinking, the fourth season?
Right. They haven't found anything yet?
They could, you know, I could use about 20 tons of TNT and put that thing to rest in one episode.
But, well, it wouldn't grow the crowd as long.
Well, that's right. Oh, and there's the phone.
God, we're back on the call, Gary.
Yeah.
Our phone's fixed. Hang on a minute.
We need to tell that phone to go away.
Or do we have a call in?
No, that's on your house. That's on the normal line.
I've done a couple call-in shows, and they're pretty terrifying, to be honest.
Yeah, they can be. I'd like to be able to do it, but then again, still haven't made the purchase that's required to do that. So that'll come at some point. But yeah, the Oak Island business is pretty fantastic, and of course you're going to load that up on your YouTube page, right?
Yeah, and just so your audience knows, Gary and I and the rest of the team, we were looking into a possible alternative theory for Oak Island that involves an Oak Island off the coast of Minnesota, and it just happens to have the same geographical properties as the Oak Island, Nova Scotia, that is kind of like the star of the History Channel show and stuff. And we kind of posited the hypothesis that maybe the regular Oak Island that everybody knows is kind of like a distraction. You know, the one with the TV show, the one that's gotten attention for, you know, what is it, 100, 200 years. And that maybe there might be some interesting mysteries to be resolved on this other Oak Island that just happens to be jurisdictionally kind of snagged by the United States. And it doesn't make sense really from a territorial view. So yeah, it was a really interesting topic. And I'd love to explore it more on your show or whatever you have in mind, Gary.
Yeah, that'd be great. And you know, maybe Xavier can come on and we could do a show just on that. In fact, I was hearing things. I'll admit to you, the first time I looked at the hypothesis of an alternate Oak Island, I actually kind of thought that was a little far-fetched. However, after listening today and examining the information, there are some serious questions that need to be answered there. And for the biggest one of which is what, you know, this so-called accident where the surveyors reached way up into Canada and happened to grab that Oak Island into the United States. So that was pretty weird.
I'm very sorry about the phone call.
That's okay.
We had a house above our house to catch on fire the night before last, and it burned completely to the ground. Hmm. And it burned the telephone lines, and they've been working, I think, all day. I had no idea that they would let it on. In fact, Gary and I were going to make them prorate the bill.
Right. Well, they knew
so
that.
So it's on. Them. All of a sudden, it rang, and it's
right.
on.
They had to get it back on for 24 hours, right?
And everybody's safe, though. You said an apartment above you, or?
Yeah, a house above. It was about
up
a block
the
up. And it was a couple. I'm telling you, I don't know how they got out of that alive. It was 3 o'clock in the morning, and it burned that house completely to the ground. Mm-hmm. And to the house to the right of it, it melted all the vinyl siding and everything. It's very scary. Mm-hmm. Very scary.
Yeah. But Beth,
anyway, we're all safe. Yeah, they made it out. Everybody made it out.
Good.
Beth in the chat room, Beth G, if you noticed that, Adrian, she has a family property about a half hour from Oak Island, Nova Scotia. Beth's in Canada.
Wow. So,
oh man, count me in.
No,
I would love to go visit Oak Island.
She said she'd need a bunk. She's not joking. So maybe we all will pile up and go up to Oak Island.
I would love to go up there.
No, of course, there's not much left of the island, I don't think, after all the years of digging and trenching. Although, a reference to the oak trees that came up earlier today, Adrian.
Oh, that was so fascinating. I'm so happy that you made that symbolism connection.
Well,
yeah, none of us thought of that. That was really, really cool.
Well, the question was, what species of oak were on the island? And from what I can read after the fact, unfortunately, there are no original oaks left on the island. So
none at all.
No, none of the originals are still there. That's what they say. So
no, that's a little bit shady.
I was going to say, can they explain why?
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Boo Boo.
Not one tree is left on the island? I don't know.
Can they explain why none of the trees are left? Is it because people are up there digging and all that?
I don't know.
Did any historical sort of record indicate what type of oak might have been involved? And I only ask because on an earlier show that Gary and I were involved with, we discussed that if the origin of the Oaks could be identified, it might be a way to discover who might have visited the island in the past. Mm-hmm. So if they were Oaks from, North America or South America or wherever, you might be able to trace a little bit of that history.
Or from Europe.
Mm-hmm. Or from Europe. Yeah, exactly. Right. Like,
yeah, that's a good avenue. Even though there may not be any Oaks left, I suppose it's possible that if you had a geologist on board, could go down to the appropriate level and see if there are any acorns. Take the run a DNA check on.
Yeah, that would be very interesting. And to Beth, you know, if you live 30 minutes from there, I would love on our next show to hear if you might have found an acorn or two. maybe you could submit it to a lab or something.
Yeah, that's, you know, so anyway, that was a pretty interesting topic I thought Gigi's Boo would be interested in. Mm-hmm. And what, let's see, had some other topics too. Had the lasers, interesting. The fast radio burst, interesting. I heard some fairly interesting prosaic explanations for all that. Not sure I'm on board with them all. But.
Yeah, I'm a little bit shaky on some of Trevor's analysis, but I definitely, you know, respect his opinion, like with the whole non-random natural origin hypotheses. You know, like they definitely need to be explored as well as the artificial ones.
Oh, sure they do. Absolutely do. And then there was the topic of fake news, and that's something that's near and dear to many people's hearts here in this chat room, I think. The fake news and the mind control and all that good stuff that goes along with it. I personally, as I gathered from the group, I have a little bit of a more radical point of view about that than I think many people do. So
I'm probably more on your camp than the others. So
yeah. We have, as I heard earlier, maybe a fringe point of view. I promised I'd leave that alone. But
no, but which is important to look at. You know, I mean, you can't just analyze the way that social media works without questioning it. You know, I mean, there are algorithms designed to present you with content that you want to see.
Right.
And you as an unbiased sort of third-party observer, you do have the right to kind of question the way that you're presented information.
Sure.
And this is kind of unprecedented because it's pretty much, I don't know if it's my generation or the generation after, but those people are being presented information in a really unique way, and it's important that they question how they are presented that information.
Right. I agree with you. And also just important to determine what the agenda is behind the entire program. And I think I kind of have a handle on that personally. But Gigi's Boo, you still there? I think we left.
Yeah, I am.
I think we left you behind. You had something to say, I think.
I said Beth put on in the chat room that they were not native to the area.
That the oak
they
trees?
Say that the oak that was there was not native to that area.
Okay, so the presumption is that someone had to put them there.
Right.
Which that goes back to the context of the esoteric meaning of oak.
Hmm. Well, listen, when I think of an oak, I'm thinking in Indian terms.
Well, let's talk about it. Let's talk about the
Indian. You think when we want to call somebody a strong name, you don't always have to use the word strong. You use things that are strong, like red oak. Mm-hmm. I consider an oak tree very, very solid and strong. Mm-hmm. So they could be an underlining meaning with all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the esoteric schools have thought oak has always been drawn upon as being a symbol of strength or of permanence, things of that nature, which would go along with some type of you know, covert message being effectively left behind. Would you think that might be the case, Adrian?
Yeah, I love your use of the word permanence. I find that it really resonates with me, that to choose oak as your symbol in order to perhaps plant some secrets, the idea of permanence, it really resonates with me. I loved in your analysis in our earlier discussion on my channel, just the esoteric meaning of permanence and its relation to oak. I find that very fascinating and rather compelling. And I think the whole crew did. It never even occurred to us to look at oak as a symbol. So I really want to thank you for bringing that kind of perspective to the discussion.
Well, you're welcome. And I guess if it's a clue, you know, as you mentioned, the other oak island in Minnesota. And what was it about another island called Birch Island that was also next door?
Yeah, so Xavier, who is a fellow contributor on our other channels, he had discovered that there is another island next door to both Oak Islands, both in Nova Scotia and in Minnesota, that are named Birch Island.
Mm-hmm. Boo Boo Bear, any particular significance to Birch?
Oh, yeah, that's just going round and around in my head. That's let me think on that a minute, because there is some significance. You got to think about wood.
Mm-hmm.
Wood. And the tree itself, a giver of life. The mm-hmm. tree gives us oxygen. It shades us from our grandmother's sun when it gets too hot. Mm-hmm. It also shades you from snow, storms. A lot of people won't get under a tree because of lightning, but yeah, no, there's something to that mm-hmm. with oak and birch.
Yeah,
let me get Mother. Let me ask Mother, and I'll get right back with y'all.
Okay. And Sock Puppet brings up the possibility that could animals have transported acorns to the island? Yes, I suppose they could have, but they were pretty selective, but only picking one island out of many. That's the only thing.
Yeah. And I also have to say with that question, because I definitely agree that it's a possibility that animals brought it, but I also find it a little bit curious that the maps, the human-made geography with Oak Island in Minnesota, Oak Island in Nova Scotia, both have a Birch Island.
Mm-hmm.
That's a human-made construct that seems a little bit curious and a little bit suspicious to me.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I found most fascinating about the Nova Scotia Oak Island, at least the documentaries point out, the level of engineering that went into the creation of the actual, what do they call it, the treasure pit or money pit or whatever it is?
Money pit, yeah.
Money pit. And, I mean, they apparently had created a earthen dam. Okay, and then installed these flood sluices, and a lot of this stuff running 100 or 200 feet underground. So, I mean, that's
okay. Let me interrupt you 1 second. Okay, my mother just said that the oak and the birch are from the same family. She can't. It starts with an F. But they are the same family. In other words, there's not much difference in them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Mother, think of that name. Fagagy, I believe. Is that it? Fagaceae.
That'd be the genus name, and it? That beats me. You're over my head in more ways than one. So.
I find it interesting that Trumpy mentions mythology mm-hmm. and the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
With all the kind of origination theories with Oak Island, it has to do with Templars. It might have to do with Christopher Columbus. That might be something that our team has overlooked, and maybe we should look a little bit deeper into is – how is the oak tree represented in mythology, even Aztec mythology, maybe kind of just determine the symbolism as you were brought up.
But I think something beats around in my head that the acorn was even a significant symbol in the days of the Sumerians. So I'm gonna dig around on that.
Floppy brought up a good point too. I had forgot about that. He said that the oak tree at Shechem is the site where Jacob buries the foreign gods of his people. That's in the Bible.
Ooh, and what do you think about that? Because that's really intriguing.
Okay, there you go. See, I'm telling you. I think it's all got to you. Woo! I don't know. I got cold chills. It's all connected. I guess it's how you believe a God. I worship Yahweh, the one and only, the great I am. But yeah, that's that. Thank you, Frumpy. That kind of smacked me in the face. I had forgot about that. Yeah. That's something.
Yeah, and Grimnir found your.
Okay, there you go.
The
Mother
Beach
was
family.
Right. F A G A C E A E. How do you pronounce that? Fadjacy. I don't know.
Beats me. According to Wikipedia. Okay. Well, Wikipedia's not totally bad.
The trees played an important part in our culture. Nobody could understand how we knew so much that was going on, say, from one village to another village. We tree knocked. Mm-hmm. We tapped on the tree. And you got to remember, back then, things weren't as loud. The noise level was very quiet back then. There was nothing motorized. You heard the crickets and the wind and everything. And if they wanted to send a message, they tree knocked. Where the Western Indians sent smoke signals, we tree knocked and we made a trail. If you'll read the trees that everybody are finding bent in the forest, you know, they're bent kind of in a U shape and they come up. That was a trail marker. So trees are very important in my culture. And if you think about it, in most every culture, they're important.
Well, I just love that we've been focusing on the tree as a symbol. And, you know, Gary pointed this out to us earlier this afternoon, and that's something that I think has been kind of dismissed or not really thought about to the extent that it should be. I mean, it's called Oak Island, and nobody has really thought about the oak part of the name of the island. You know, I mean, and trees have a lot of symbolism to it, and a lot of, I guess you can call it metaphor or whatever, but, you know, it seems that we might be missing part of the puzzle here.
Mm-hmm.
That just hasn't been really looked at.
And it could be.
Who's supposed to have buried all this treasure?
Well, that's the $64,000 question.
Well, how do they know it's there?
Well, apparently they've done core drillings and come up with little pieces of gold jewelry and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
yeah.
It might be in Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, back on the acorn, is considered to be an emblem of good luck, prosperity, youthfulness, and power. The acorn is a good luck symbol. It may also represent spiritual growth. The Norse believe the acorns displayed on a windowsill would protect the house from lightning. This may seem somewhat trivial, but back in the day, it was widely accepted.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and we took the acorn, leached them, got the bitterness out, 2 weeks in the creek of a running water, and then we beat them into flour, so it's life-sustaining. You can cook with them, so that would be life-giving. Good luck, life-giving. It's multi-purpose.
Mm-hmm. And it's also, even back, if you go along with the Sitchin stuff, the Sumerian Anunnaki, I don't know what the right word to use there, so anyway, that those symbolisms often included acorns. So that's a very ancient reference.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess to me the most exciting thing about it is that could be used as a big clue as far as mapping out certain places. If you look for example, looking for all the Oak Islands that might exist. What are your thoughts on that, Adrian?
I mean, the fact that you drew a connection between Sumerian texts and Oak Island, that's something I would love to look into. I think symbology is a big part of the puzzle, and I think you're at kind of the forefront of looking at symbols and figuring out how they might connect to one another.
Well, I mean, we look for clues. That's the best we can do. And, you know, we've come up with a hypothesis, try to disprove it, and see where we go. Gigi's Boo. Mm-hmm. Anything else to add, Gigi's Boo, on that topic?
No. Nope. Move to another one.
Okay. Oh, heck. Let's see here. Let's talk. Let's step back a little bit. And of course, we had the Shadow People show last week, right? Or no, the week week before. The week before last. And there were some people who actually responded to that through the various social media. People talking about having seen those things. And, you know, and I think we kind of touched on the idea that maybe we're looking at interdimensional events, or even the possibility of time travelers. What do you think about that, Gigi Spoon?
Well, I fully believe in it. I know a person, this is not actually what you would say time travel, but again, it is. I have a person who actually has seen it open, put their hand in it, it was snowing, even had a dog who entered into it. And on the other side where the dog went in, the dog was only there about 10 minutes. But on this rim, they were gone about 45.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, the portals are there and you can time travel. Yeah, you can.
Yeah, I think the Cherokee have some insight into that as well, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and
these are topics where we can't really talk much about.
No, but I can tell you it's there. There's some things that happen. Mm-hmm.
So, Adrian, that was a year ago that you made the documentary. What else has come up along those lines since then?
Yeah, sure thing. And this is a topic that is very close and very personal to me. I believe, from my own personal experience, that there is a close tie-in to the Shadow People phenomenon, to the visitor phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
My own personal belief is that they are manifestations of the same source. So I know, as we discussed in prior videos, prior shows, that I myself have had these kind of encounters, and obviously I get a little bit, you know, worked up whenever I talk about it, but I do believe that they are entities from somewhere else. And by that, I mean two things. I think there's an interdimensional hypothesis that's worthy of consideration. And I also think that more along the lines of my own research is the type 4 to type 5 civilization hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So this would be an extraterrestrial civilization that was millions of years more advanced than us, that basically space and time would not be a barrier to them. And should they choose to visit basically ants. We would be ants to them.
Mm-hmm.
Should they choose to visit cultures and civilizations like our own, how would that experience manifest itself? And I think that throughout history, we have had recorded experiences such as the succubus, the incubus, mm-hmm. Shadow people, the boogeyman. Throughout history, we've had several different cultural representations of the visitor hypothesis. And mm-hmm. I think it could be tied into either an interdimensional hypothesis or the type 4 civilization hypothesis.
Okay. Fascinating stuff. So mm-hmm. it makes you wonder. It doesn't make you wonder. It actually reminds us that how much we don't know. And I guess that's where I take exception with some of the folks who I personally believe suffer with this normalcy bias. Because if we don't know it to exist today, then it must not exist. I guess that would make us kind of, we people who decided that the Earth was not the center of the universe, made us kind of fringe, wasn't it? So,
we're not the only ones here.
Yeah, I'm being sarcastic. I'm sorry.
Cut it out.
Gigi's Boo, what about your shadow people? You got the shadow dog laying there right under your feet. So.
Oh, he's a hot mess. I told Gary, I was laying in bed the other night, that Gary, there goes that dog again. And it wasn't our dog, but it's a black canine. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of around the bed and everything. I said, there's that shadow dog. And yep. It just kind of walked around the bed. I saw it. I tried to do like Hal said. I tried to kind of gradually turn and look.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see it. And that's why I knew it was a canine. It was just kind of walking around. And then it just kind of went away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I have Hal to think about that. You know, he kind of watched him, and he said something about turn looking at him. I think he said that they don't like to be, they don't like for you to look straight at them. And when the guy saw me looking, it just kind of chugged on off.
Yeah, that's right. Hal did share a very rather detailed experience
yeah.
of his. Just in that way, there where he's at in Oregon. That, you know, that basically, as I understood him to say, that they would be essentially moving through the woods until he looked at them, and then they would kind of either stop or take off and away from him, that sort of thing. So he had the distinct impression that they were quite aware of his observation.
Mm-hmm. There were three of them. Am I not right? Hal's in the chat room, I think. Mm-hmm. He said there were three of them behind the tree. I think that's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very fascinating to me because...
Yeah, Adrian, have you ever heard of the case where the shadow people are gun shy, so to speak, that they don't want to be seen?
I definitely have heard of that, and I think it might tie a little bit into Schrodinger's
mm-hmm.
quantum mechanical hypothesis that when you observe something, it changes.
Mm-hmm. It's either dead or alive simultaneously.
Exactly. And kind of the moral of the story was that when you observe something, its reaction will change
mm-hmm.
To you. And I think that brings up a couple of interesting ideas, because either one, shadow people, ghosts, visitors, whatever you want to call them, either they're a sentient force that is responding to your stimulus of you observing them,
mm-hmm.
Like a conscious kind of being reacting to you, or it's a force of nature,
mm-hmm.
Which is just kind of following the natural physical laws of the quantum mechanical kind of Schrodinger idea that if you observe it, it will react. And both, I think, are equally kind of mind-numbing. So it's a really interesting subject.
Yeah, and we talked also about the remote viewing, which, according to reports from folks like Ingo Swann and those sorts, that they had run into situations where the people they were observing became aware of them and as they were remote viewing them. Gigi Spoo, you've had some thoughts about remote viewing, haven't you?
Yeah, I told you, Gary gets tickled because I call it the Spider-Man hanging off the house looking in the window at me. It was upside down. And I saw it, and I just, it scared the you-know-what out of me. He was at work. And I called him. I said, Gary, there is somebody hanging off the top of the house looking in at me. And he said, how does it look? And I said, it looks like a man. And he's just hanging upside down looking in the window. Sort of like you see Spider-Man climb up a window. Mm-hmm. That's this way it looked. And he said, you're probably getting somebody that's doing remote viewing. And after he told me that, I got okay. You know, I was all right with it. I haven't seen that, but maybe twice.
Adrian, you familiar with the remote viewing program?
I am, but I'm so interested in what she just said because that might have been a visitor experience. Could you describe like the color or what you were feeling or even the temperature?
When I found out that it was looking at me, the blinds were open because it's scary as it work, and the dog was here with me, and I wasn't worried, and I just kind of had an eerie feeling that something was kind of, it wasn't right, exactly right, and nothing really I could put my finger on, just something just really wasn't right, and I heard the dog kind of do a low growl, and I ran and got the gun. I said, so, I'll pop somebody if they couldn't try to come in on me, but I happened to just, I was started toward the kitchen, and I turned around, and it was just, it looked like a man dressed in gray. Could see his eyes. That's about it. That's all I could see was the eyes. They were kind of hanging upside down, viewing me like that, just hanging. And that's when the hair on the back of my neck stood up and I got scared. Because it was not, I knew it was in a male form, a human form, but I couldn't make out much of the features. It was almost hung like a bat, too, but it looked like it was holding on. That's when I called Gary.
that is creepy, and I can already tell like the emotional response that you have.
You could hear it in my voice. I was scared to death, and I had the gun, and me and the dog ran, and I don't know why. I went in the bedroom and locked the door, I could have come in. If it was somebody that could come in like that, they were going to come in and get me. But I was on the phone with Gary, and Gary kind of calmed me down, and that's that. I got through that okay. But I've had some bad experiences in my life, and I'm not too scared of many things, but I can be spooked, and it takes something extraordinary to spook me, but that did. Woo, that did.
It's almost primal. You know what I mean? Like your body just responds to the visitor experience in like a primal way. You can't explain it, but you just know you have to fight or flight away from it.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Hal pointed out that he saw one each time, but there were three different occasions.
Oh, three different times, okay.
Yeah. But in any case, they were aware of him, clearly. So, I don't know. That's just one of those. We just don't have enough information on those topics, I'm afraid.
Graham said it was probably Mothman. No, Mothman's eyes glow, if I'm not mistaken. Don't they, Gary?
Uh, there have been reports that way. But Mothman's usually also associated with a disaster, an impending disaster. So
hard to shoot an urethral bean. I was going to give it a try, Graham.
We shoot him with an urethral bullet.
At the time, I really didn't know what it was. I just knew it was something looking, and I was getting ready to. I got the gun and the dog, and we ran. And Gary told me, he calmed me down. He said, "Now peep out, baby, and see if it's still there." And I peeped, and it wasn't there. So I went to the window and looked, and I didn't see it. So,
Adrian, you had something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. In my personal experience and my personal research, I believe that entities such as Mothman, visitors, things like that, as far as I can tell, it kind of is from the same source. It's kind of a manifestation from a single source. So it's not like you saw Mothman, no, you didn't see a ghost. It's kind of like you saw an apparition. You saw a manifestation of the force that we're all kind of exploring. I don't think there's a difference between Mothman and visitor and ghost experiences. I think they're all kind of one and the same. They're all just kind of different heads of the same Hydra.
Yeah.
Something else came up today, so a little bit off topic, but we were talking about the little people.
Oh yeah.
And the tricksters.
Little people are something. They're very well. There's different forms of little people. You got the dogwood people and the laurel people, and they're a little smaller than the actual little people. But the little people, they're kind of the keep. They're along with the bear, Yauna. They're the keeper of the woodlands, and they have been known to take care of children. They love children and hunters. My grandfather was hunting. And he got turned around in the woods, and he just sat down, try to gather his bearings, because it's kind of hard to lose an Indian in the woods. We're going to find our way out. And he just sat down. He said it was real cold, and he kind of lost his bearings. So he sat down and tried to gather himself. And he said, and when he did that, he closed his eyes, and he heard giggling. And they laughed, and that's all he would say. And he appeared the next morning. He came out. They were sending some of the warriors in to hunt him because he had came out, and he never would talk about it, but that he heard them giggling. Something else happened. Don't know what. Wasn't bad. But it was just something that he didn't feel like he should talk about. Another thing is, you won't hear too many of the Cherokees talk about the experiences with the little people. Now, my oldest niece, she was forever hearing them. I think the younger the child is, the more in tune they are to hear those things. You hear people say about angelic presence, that babies and children are more in tune to hear that. And to welcome that is because of their innocence. And I truly believe that's true, because she would hear them. And we were up in the mountains, and we went down to the creek, and we'd found a spring. And she said, "Shh." And I said, "What?" She said, "Be quiet." Just whispered. I said, "Okay." And she said, "The little people are here." And I said, "How do you know that?" And she said, "Shh." And so I followed her. She wasn't but about maybe 5 at the time. And she said, "I smell them." I said, "What do they smell like?" She said, "They smell like a cucumber. They smell wonderful." And she said, "Don't you hear them laughing?" And try as I might, I was very, very quiet, and I couldn't. And she followed all around with her eyes and laughed. She could see them. I couldn't. So they're there, and I think it's the innocence of a child that they appear to. Now, the dogwood people, are a little bit more mischievous. They hide things, and they're about the size maybe of what the Irish call a brownie. And they do all kind of silly things and stuff like that. But the little people are very protective of the woodlands and the hunter and lost people. And another thing, if you ever in the woods and you hear them singing, just be quiet and go the opposite direction of where they're singing. They're holding council and they're probably dancing. That's what the old ones used to tell us. So I always pay attention to stuff like that. A lot of people say that I'm superstitious. No. These things happen and they're true. So, Yep, the little people. That's all I've got to say about that, as far as Gump would say.
Adrian, any thoughts about the little people phenomenon?
Well, yeah, sure. My personal take on that is that it's another manifestation of the visitors. Mm-hmm. So I think throughout recorded history and contemporary history that people have seen a lot of weird stuff that they can't explain, but it always involves a visitor coming and interacting with a person. Whether it's an alien abduction, whether it's a gnome, whether it's a ghost, it's always something is coming to interact with the individual. And my own personal research has come to the conclusion that it is the same manifestation of a different manifestation from the same source.
Right.
I definitely think that our historical records of incubus, succubus, whatever it is, fairies, all those things, while historically might seem unrelated, I think today we might be able to say, well, maybe they are related. You know, maybe there is kind of a connection between all the mysterious paranormal phenomena and this idea of visitors from outside manifesting themselves in different ways to different people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We talked about... We were talking about Mothman last week. We touched on the gray man off the coast of South Carolina that comes and warns people when a hurricane's coming. And if you see the gray man, your house is spared. That's been for hundreds of years. And Hal brought up that he would have a staff. And Hal, I'll let Gary tell you a story. I'm not going to put it over the show about what happened recently with a staff, and you'll find that interesting. But like you say, they manifest to warn. I've never known Mothman to hurt anybody. Neither have I heard about the Gray Man hurting anybody. The Jersey Devil, now that's a whole different story. That thing's kind of vicious, I think. And there's a lot of things. So you can take it from the realm of the good and evil, maybe. You got manifestations of good and evil. And I think the good outweighs the bad.
Okay. Well, let's see. We still have about 11 minutes or so.
Touch on those laser lights.
Say again?
Didn't Adrian say something about laser lights?
Yeah, Adrian, you want to talk about the interesting network of lasers?
It's funny, when she said that, I was like, does she mean the laser lights I saw as a kid, or does she mean the laser lights in the scientific article that we recently uncovered?
Both, Adrian, both.
Both, okay. Well, to the first point, we and Gary was a part of this show. There is a really exciting article just published on a number of physics websites. I'm trying to remember. It's like AXISX or something. I forget the actual URL, but you'll be able to find it on my channel whenever I eventually publish this video, where this individual created a hypothesis about what a civilization what they would do to try to communicate their existence to other civilizations. And I've discussed this in length with other channels about the issues with that. You know, I don't think it's a good idea to broadcast your existence, but should a civilization choose to do that, one way they might do it is to build laser platforms in orbit around their host planet and possibly outside of their host planet, a little bit outside of the heliosphere of their local star, and broadcast a pattern using lasers. And the pattern that this individual identified as being the most simple yet obviously artificial was to have the wavelength of the laser and the period between bursts of the laser cut in half each time. He went and dug into the data of about 2.5 million stars that were scanned, over the last decade or something. And he identified 234 solar systems that were exhibiting the same pattern that halving of wavelengths and halving of periodicity. He found about 234 stars, and the overwhelming majority of them happened to be in a sun-like solar system, so a G-type star or better. So it was a really fascinating article. I reached out to a number of physicists at the University of Pittsburgh, and none of them wanted to touch it. They did respond that it was intriguing, but that it required, what did they say? Extraordinary claims require extraordinary proof. I heard that quote about 3 or 4 times. But none of them, disproved anything. You know, it still remained a valid, argument. So it was a really interesting, article, and it's just like a week old or something, maybe 2 weeks old. So it's very cutting edge.
Okay. And that's pretty fascinating to me, because it does suggest if it is not a natural source, it suggests an intention.
Right.
And that's pretty fascinating. So whoever's behind it and whatever the reasons are for it, there is a definite intention involved. So what about the, I think you already talked about this actually, but your childhood laser experience was.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And then lasers take a different turn, from my adult life, when it comes to my childhood. And I know a couple of weeks ago, I discussed this, with you. But I've had a number of visitor experiences in my own life, which has kind of motivated me to become active in the community and to create the channel that I've created. But my own personal experience involved when I was a young child, about 5 or 6 years old. And I used to go downstairs and I used to watch morning cartoons. And One morning when I was doing that, I started to hear a voice coming from my father's study, which just happened to be next door to the living room. When I walked in and I looked up, there were red laser lights zinging around the roof or the ceiling of my father's study. And it spoke to me and it said, "Lonely little boy." And that experience to me has pretty much shaped my entire life's involvement with this community. And I'll never forget when the next thing that I remember was my mother picking me up and dragging me to the couch, and I'm crying and I'm hysterical. And she said, "There's no such thing as ghosts. There's no such thing as ghosts."
Wait a minute. Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Why
yeah.
would she say that? Why would she say that?
Because
if she didn't see something too.
Yeah, because I was standing there in my father's study, and I was just screaming, "Lonely little boy." And I've had a history, at least when I was a child, of having sort of those encounters. I would oftentimes wake up and, you know, scream to my mother when I was a child and say they're like in my room and stuff. So this wasn't anything new to her. But this time I had been downstairs and she had picked me up and had screamed, you know, there's no such thing as ghosts. And whenever she said that, every electronic appliance in our house exploded at the same time. So it was a really, really bizarre scenario.
Holy crap.
Yes. Something that I, still wrestle with today as an adult. But it's something that has motivated me to like pursue this field, diligently, to, you know, apply like logic and whatever, just to try to figure it out. And I just want to bring up something else too. When I was a kid, I was terrified of lamps. And I know that sounds kind of ridiculous when you hear it off on its face, but some of the research I did with Whitley Strieber and stuff, apparently inanimate objects can engender a type of power or at least like an emotional response whenever you see them. And it was always curious whenever I had read about that and kind of researched it, how my response to lamps as a child kind of makes sense in this visitor kind of context as now I'm a grown up. I even remember when I was, 8 years old or something, my parents were throwing out their lamp in their bedroom, and I took it out into the backyard and beat it to shit with a baseball bat. And it's just this weird kind of connection that you can have with inanimate objects. And Whitley Strieber really kind of explored that field a lot. And I can just say that me personally have experienced a lot of what he discussed in his theories.
Well, what do you think about that, Gigi's Boo?
Well, my mother's listening, and a light bulb went off for her, okay? She wants me to tell you about her experience.
Okay.
In her grandparents' home, they had a light fixture that hung from the ceiling. It was a light. They had a chain that you pulled it on and off. But on that light fixture, there was some type of electrical little box or something that was connected to it that was up near where it connected to the ceiling. She was terrified of that light fixture.
And I can totally emotionally you know, understand that reaction. Like it's irrational,
she said that when she looked at it, it terrified her. And the only thing that she could say to her parents were, the monkey's going to get me. The monkey's going to get me. And it was when it. Yeah. Okay. She said she was grown and they changed the light fixture. And her brother called and said, Mom and Daddy wanted me to let you know that we got the monkey down. And she said, I freaked. She said, I knew automatically what he was talking about. He had no clue that she was actually afraid of it. He thought she just called it the monkey. And she said she never had any problem whatsoever going back into that room after they took that down, but her whole life she had a problem going into that room.
Absolutely fantastic. What a story.
She's listening to the show, and I mean, she said, she whispered to me, and I had to mute, and she told me about it. And she said, it's just like a light bulb went off when he said that. So there is something to objects. Yeah. Let me tell you about something that frightened me. I haven't even told Gary about this. I love abandoned buildings, abandoned places. Okay, I'll be real quick. I was online looking at an abandoned place, and it was a church, and it took you into the basement. And for a split second, when I saw that basement, it was finished with columns. You could worship there. For a split second, when I looked at that dark basement with those columns, I had a great fear wash Don't know why.
Okay.
I hadn't even told Gary that.
All right. Well, there's a whole lot. See, the more we talk about, the more that needs to be discussed. What do you think, Adrian? And we're out of time.
Just scratching the surface. And I really want to thank your mother for sharing that story, because with lamps, it seems kind of ridiculous. But the more I look into Whitley Strieber's theories and stuff, like it starts to kind of form into his hypothesis. And, you know, thank her very much for sharing that story. I really appreciate it.
I sure will.
Okay, and thanks, Adrian, for coming back. And obviously, you'll have to come back again.
Next week. Come back next week.
Because this discussion continues to expand, which is cool. And that's a neat thing. Adrian, you want to plug anything before we take off here?
Oh, no, the only thing I could plug is I love this show. It's been a real pleasure to be a part of it. And I look forward to finishing up our discussion that Gary and I had earlier today. So look forward to it on my channel, Suspect Sky. And thank you again. It's always happy to be here.
Okay, and thanks for coming. And we look forward to the next time. But Gigi's Boo, anything to say?
Oh, no, just I love you all, big to my heart.
All righty. As do we all. And thanks again for listening tonight and joining us on The Road Less Traveled. And we look forward to seeing you again next week. Same time, same station. Have a good one. We'll see you. Bye-bye.